Chapter 28, The Giant Donut. "You'll have to leave the squirrel in the car," said Flora's father as he pulled into the parking lot of the Giant Donut.
"No," said Flora, "it's too hot."
"I'll leave the windows down," said her father.
"Someone will steal him."
"You think someone would steal him?" Her father sounded doubtful, but hopeful. "Who would steal a squirrel?"
"A criminal," said Flora.
The criminal element spoke often and passionately about the nefarious activities that every human being is capable of. Not only did it insist that the human heart was dark beyond all reckoning, it also likened the heart to a river. And further, it said, if we are not careful, that river can carry us along in its hidden currents of want and anger and need and transform each of us into the very criminal we fear.
"The human heart is a deep, dark river with hidden currents," Flora said to her father. "Criminals are everywhere."
Her father tapped his fingers on the steering wheel. "I wish I could disagree with you, but I can't." Ulysses sneezed. "Bless you," said her father.
"I'm not leaving him," said Flora.
Alfred T. Slipper took his parakeet Dolores with him everywhere, sometimes even to the offices of the Pax et Aucet Life Insurance Company. "Not without my parakeet," that was what Alfred said.
"Not without my squirrel," said Flora.
If her father recognized the sentence, if the words reminded him of their time together, reading about in Candesto, he didn't show it. He merely sighed. "Bring him in then," he said, "but keep the lid on that shoebox." Ulysses climbed into the shoebox and Flora dutifully lowered the lid on his small face.
"Okay," she said, "all right."
She climbed out of the car and then stood and looked up at the giant donut sign. "Giant donuts inside," the sign screamed in neon letters, while an extremely large donut disappeared over and over again into a cup of coffee. But there was no hand on the donut. "Who," Flora wondered, "is doing the dunking?" A small shiver ran down her spine. "What if we're all donuts just waiting to be dunked?" she thought. It was a kind of question that William Spiver would ask. She could hear him asking it. It was also the kind of question that William Spiver would have an answer for. That was the thing about William Spiver. He always had an answer, even if it was an annoying one.
"Listen to me," she whispered to the shoebox. "You are not a donut waiting to be dunked. You are a superhero. Do not let yourself be tricked or fooled. Remember the shovel. Keep an eye on George Buckman."
Her father got out of the car. He put his hands in his pockets and jingled his change. "Shall we?" he said. "Stall, delay, obfuscate."
"Let's," said Flora.
Chapter 29, Coochie Coo. The giant donut smelled like fried eggs and donuts in other people's closets. The dining room was full of laughter and donut dunking. A waitress sat Flora and her father at a booth in the corner and handed them glossy, enormous menus. Flora surreptitiously... The criminal element recommended surreptitious action at all possible junctures. Remove the lid from the shoebox. Ulysses poked his head out and looked around the restaurant. And then he turned his attention to the menu. He stared at it with a dreamy look on his face.
"Get whatever you want," said Flora's father.
"Order your heart's desire." Ulysses emitted a happy sigh.
"Pay attention," whispered Flora.
The waitress came and stood over them. She tapped her pencil on the order pad.
"What can I get you?" she said.
Her name tag spelled out her name in all capital letters. "Rita." Flora narrowed her eyes. The exclamation point made Rita sound untrustworthy, or at the very least, insincere.
"Well," said Rita,
"what's it gonna be?" Her hair was piled up very, very high in her head, and she looked like Marie Antoinette. Not that Flora had ever seen Marie Antoinette, but she had read about her in A Terrible Things Can Happen to You, issue on the French Revolution. Marie Antoinette, from the little bit that Flora knew about her, would have made a very bad waitress. Flora suddenly remembered that she had a squirrel in her lap. She tapped Ulysses on the head again. "Lie low," she whispered to him, "but be prepared." She arranged the washcloth so that he was almost completely hidden.
"What you got there?" asked Rita.
"Where?" said Flora.
"In the box," said Rita. "Got a baby doll on the box? Are you talking to your baby doll?"
"Talking to my baby doll?" said Flora. She felt a rush of outrage crawl up her cheeks.
For the love of Pete, she was 10 years old, almost 11. She knew how to administer CPR. She knew how to outwit an arch nemesis. She was acquainted with the profound importance of seal blubber. She was a sidekick to a superhero. Plus, she was a cynic. What self-respecting cynic would carry around a doll in a shoebox?
"I do not," said Flora, "have a baby doll."
"Let me see her," said Rita. "Don't be shy." She bent over, her big Marie Antoinette hair scraping against Flora's chin.
"No," said Flora.
"George Buckman,"
said Flora's father in a worried voice.
"How do you do?"
"Coochie coo," said Rita. Flora felt a very pointed, very specific sense of doom. Rita poked her pencil into the shoebox slowly. Slowly, she pushed the washcloth around. Slowly, and the washcloth, oh so slowly, fell back and revealed Ulysses' whiskered face.
"George Buckman," said her father in a much louder voice. "How do you do?"
Rita screamed along an impossibly loud scream. Ulysses screamed in return, and then he leapt from that shoebox. At this point, things stopped proceeding at such a leisurely pace. The squirrel was airborne, and time swung back into action with a vengeance. At last, thought Flora, it's incandesto time. Chapter 30, Sunny Side Up. He had never been so frightened in his life, never. The woman's face was monstrous, her hair was monstrous, and the word on her name tag, Rita, appeared monstrous to him too. Be calm, he told himself as she poked her pencil around. He held himself as still as he could, but then Rita screamed, and it was absolutely impossible not to answer her long, piercing shriek with a piercing shriek of his own. She screamed, he screamed, and then every one of his animal instincts kicked in. He acted without thinking. He tried to escape. He leapt from the box and ended up, somehow, exactly where he did not want to be, in the middle of the monstrous hair. Rita jumped up and down. She put her hands to her head. She swatted and clawed, trying to dislodge him. The harder she hit him, the higher she jumped, the more fiercely the squirrel clung. In this way, Rita and Ulysses danced together around the giant donut.
"What's happening?" someone shouted.
"Her hair is on fire," someone answered.
"No, no, there's something in her hair," another person shouted, "and it's alive."
"Ah," screamed Rita, "help me." How, Ulysses wondered, had things gone so wrong? Only moments ago, he had been looking at the giant donut menu, captivated by the glossy pictures of food and the dazzling descriptions that accompanied the pictures. There were giant donuts with sprinkles, giant donuts powdered iced, giant donuts filled with things, jelly cream and chocolate. He had never had a giant donut. Actually, he had never had any kind of donut. They looked delicious, all of them. How was a squirrel to choose? And to complicate matters, there were eggs, scrambled, poached, over easy, sunny side up. Sunny side up, thought Ulysses, as he clung to Rita's hair. What a wonderful phrase. A man emerged from the kitchen. He had on a gigantic white hat, and he was holding something metal that flashed in the overhead lights of the giant donut. It was a knife.
Help me, screamed Rita.
And me, thought Ulysses, help me too. But he was quite certain that the man with the knife had no intention of helping him. And then he heard Flora's voice. He couldn't see her because Rita was now spinning around and everything in the restaurant had become somewhat blurred. All the faces had become one face. All the screams had become one scream. But Flora's voice stood out. It was the voice of the person he loved. He concentrated on her words. He worked to understand her. "Ulysses," she shouted. "Ulysses, remember who you are. Remember who he was? Who was he?" As if Flora had heard his unspoken question, she answered him. "You're Ulysses." "That's right," he thought. "I am." "Act," shouted Flora. This was good advice. Flora was absolutely right. He was Ulysses, and he must act. The man with the knife stepped towards Rita. Ulysses loosened his hold on her hair. He leapt again. This time, he leapt with purpose and intent. He leapt with all of his strength. He flew. Chapter 31. Holy, unanticipated occurrences. Flora watched Ulysses fly over her, his tail extended at full length and his front paws delicately pointed. It was just like her dream. He looked incredibly, undeniably heroic. "Holy Begumba," said Flora. She climbed on top of the booth so that she had a better view. Then Incandesto flew. When he became a brilliant streak of light in the darkness of the world, he was usually headed somewhere to save someone, and Dolores was always flying at his side, offering advice, encouragement, and wisdom. Flora wasn't sure exactly what Ulysses was doing, and it didn't look like he really knew either, but he was flying. "George Buckman," whispered her father, "how do you do?" Flora had forgotten about her father. He was looking up at Ulysses, and he was smiling. It wasn't a sad smile, it was a happy smile. "Pop," said Flora. There was a long, loud scream from Rita. "It was in my hair," she shouted. Someone threw a donut at Ulysses. A baby started to cry. Flora climbed out of the booth so that she could stand next to her father. She slipped her hand in his. "Holy, unanticipated occurrences," said Flora's father in the voice of Dolores. It had been a long time since Flora had heard her father say those words. "His name is Ulysses," she told him. Her father looked at her. He raised his eyebrows. "Ulysses?" he said. He shook his head, and then he laughed. It was a single syllable, "ha." And then he laughed longer, "ha, ha, ha." Flora's heart opened up inside of her. "Do not hope," she whispered to it. Then she noticed that the cook was leaping and twirling, waving his knife and trying to reach the flying squirrel. She looked up at her father and said, "Malfeasance! This must be stopped, right?" "Right," said her father. And since her father agreed with her, Flora stuck out her foot and tripped the man with the knife. Chapter 32, Sprinkles. "I love Flora. It was in my hair." Sunny side up. Splat. "I flew. Where's Flora? Is that a piece of donut?" Sprinkles. Chapter 33. Does rabies itch? His eyes were closed. His head was bleeding. Flora knew from terrible things can happen to you that head wounds bleed excessively, whether they're bad or not. "All head wounds bleed excessively," she said to her father. "Don't panic." "Okay," said her father. "Use this." He handed her his tie. Flora knelt down. She had a very powerful sense of deja vu. Was it just yesterday that she had bent over the body of an unknown squirrel in Tootie's backyard? "Ulysses," she said. She dabbed at the blood with the tie. The squirrel didn't open his eyes. An eerie quiet descended. The whole of the giant donut became preternaturally calm. Everything, the donuts, the squirrel, her father, seemed to hold its breath. Flora knew what was happening. She had read about it in "Terrible Things Can Happen to You." It was the calm before the storm. The air becomes still. The birds stop singing. The world waits. And then the storm comes. Inside the giant donut, there was a moment of deep quiet, of collectively held breath. And then someone said, "I think it's a rat." "But it was flying," said another voice. "It was in my hair," said Rita. The cook shouted, "I'm going to call the cops. That's what I'm going to do." Rita was right behind him. "Forget about the cops, Ernie. Call an ambulance. I have rabies. It was in my hair." "You?" said Ernie. He pointed to Flora with his knife. "You tripped me." That's her, said Rita. She's the one. Plus, she brought that thing in here in the first place, dressed up like a baby doll.
I did not, said Flora, dress him up like a baby doll. And this is all your fault.
The criminal element said that sometimes it was wise to put criminals on the defensive by making slanderous or blatantly untrue comments. The surprising unfairness of this tactic will often stop criminals in their tracks. It seemed to work. Rita blinked. She opened her mouth and closed it again.
My fault? She said.
Flora bent over Ulysses and put her finger on his chest. She felt his heart beating in a slow, thoughtful way. Gratitude and relief washed through her, and her own heart, which had been beating much too quickly, slowed inside of her chest. It answered the squirrel's heart with its own measured thud, thud, thud. Ulysses, her heart seemed to say, Ulysses.
I'm calling the cops, said Ernie. George Buckman, how do you do? Shouted Flora's father. Is there any reason to call the police?
Well, for one, said Rita, it was in my hair.
Do you think the police should be notified of a squirrel in your hair? Said Flora's father.
The idiocy of this question, its unsettling logic, made Flora suddenly grateful for her father. She picked up Ulysses and cradled him in her left arm.
I think I can feel the rabies coming on, said Rita. My stomach itches.
Does rabies itch? Said Flora's father.
I'm going to call somebody, said Ernie. She tripped me.
When do you think it would be wise to call in this matter? The tripping, said Flora's father. He opened the door. He gestured for Flora to walk through it. She did. The door swung behind them.
Run, said her father, and they both began to run. At some point, Flora's father started to laugh again. It wasn't a ha-ha-ha kind of laugh. It was a wee-hee kind of laugh.
Hysteria, thought Flora. She knew what to do for hysteria. Her father needed to be slapped. Unfortunately, there wasn't time right now. They had to make their getaway. Her father laughed all the way to the car. He laughed when they were in the car. He laughed as he placed his hands at the 10 o'clock and 2. He laughed as he backed out of the parking lot and drove away from the giant donut. He stopped laughing only once, long enough for him to shout, "Holy Begumba!" in the voice of Dolores the parakeet. And then he went back laughing. Chapter 34, The Getaway. They were making their getaway, but they were making their getaway slowly, because even when Flora's father was thinking that things were hilarious, even when he was talking like a parakeet, he still, apparently, did not believe in speeding. Flora kept looking behind them to see if they were being followed by the cops, or Rita, or Ernie. When she finally looked down at Ulysses, his eyes were still closed, and a terrible thought occurred to her.
What if he has a concussion? She said to her father.
Her father, of course, laughed. Flora tried to remember what terrible things can happen to you, said about concussions. There was something about making the person with a head injury speak, a favorite nursery rhyme, so that speech patterns, slurring, etc., could be evaluated. Flora stared at the squirrel. He couldn't speak. Also, she doubted he knew any nursery rhymes. There was a small cut on his head, but that bleeding had stopped, and he was breathing softly, regularly.
Ulysses, she said.
And then she remembered, in its entirety, an ominous sentence from Terrible Things. It is absolutely imperative that you keep the potentially concussed patient awake at all times. She shook the squirrel gently. His eyes stayed closed. She shook him again harder, and he opened his eyes and then closed them again. Flora's heart thudded once and then dropped all the way down to her toes. She was suddenly terrified.
Do superheroes die? She said out loud.
Her father stopped laughing. Listen, he said, we won't let him die. Flora's heart thudded again, a different kind of thud. It wasn't fear this time, it was hope. Does that mean that you won't try to hit him over the head with a shovel? She asked.
I won't, said her father.
Ever?
Ever.
You promise?
I promise.
Her father looked at her in the rearview mirror. Flora looked back. Let's go to your place then, she said. He'll be safe there. At these words, George Buckman started laughing hysterically again.